Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2018, Episode 8. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. The Huskers finally get the season started, and it ends with a disappointing but yet optimistic loss at Memorial Stadium, if that makes any sense whatsoever. I'm Travis Justice, joined once again by the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiskin. Does that make sense? A disappointing but optimistic loss? Can you have that? I know there's no moral victories. I don't believe in moral victories.
I'm not a big moral victory fan, although I'm freaking pissed about the loss. It sucks losing to Colorado.
I understand that.
You know, that being said, there was a lot of good things to take away from the game, and there was stuff that I really, really liked seeing. I mean, you know, some of the things that I saw, and this is stuff I've talked about it on social media, talked about it with Sevier on the Bottom Line a little bit.
And by the way, I'm going to cut you off right there because you're going to be on with Michael Sevier on the Bottom Line, which is on AM 590 every Monday. What time? About 11:30 or so?
Going to be ballpark around 11:30 okay. or so. Now, he does various segments. Some of these segments we tape, some are going to be I'm in the studio live. It kind of depends on, well, again, goes back
your
to
your work schedule.
I got a day job. So that is Sevier's day job.
I'm glad that Michael Sevier has recognized the talent that I've brought out in you.
You have like nailed it here. So, well, you know what? I don't want to blow too much smoke up your ass, but truth be told, it's not like anybody would pay attention to my sorry ass outside of the medical world if it wasn't for this.
That's not true.
I'm good enough. But, I'm smart enough. And doggone it, Travis likes me.
I do like
him. No,
I
but
like
anyway, a couple of the points that really stuck in my head after watching the game, when you go back and look at the various coaches Nebraska's had come through over the last, 14 seasons since Solich was here? Since 2003.
Yeah.
Every time you got a new coach in, the thought that went through my head after the first few games was we either need to like completely, these guys need to either revamp the system they're doing or they need to completely shit can and hire a new offensive or defensive coordinator, which is essentially revamping a system, or there needs to seriously, seriously, seriously be a monstrous upgrade in talent if this crappy system is going to work at all. Those were the three assessments that went through my head when Callahan hit the door. Not a ton with Pelini, except mainly on the offensive side. I always questioned what those guys did offensively. Even a little bit defensively. And then especially with Riley, I tried so damn hard to be optimistic about Mike Riley. I think everybody did because I think everybody felt he was a good person. But all I could think was, this defensive system needs to get revamped. We need a new D coordinator, preferably not a complete psychopath from Iowa, or we need a serious, serious upgrade in talent. Was what you walked away from all of those coaching staffs thinking. This was the first time I've watched a game, and for Pete's sakes, it was a freaking loss. And I walked out of this going, oh, my God, we outrushed an opponent over 300 yards to, 44 yards, something like that. It was sub 50 yards and had 7 sacks. We lost the game, but at the same time, it was due to turnovers and mental mistakes. It's not because we didn't play hard. It's not because we had this massive talent gap. It's not because we didn't play physical football. When was the last time you saw opposing offensive linemen having to leave the game due to injury? I don't want anybody to get hurt. I hope those guys are back playing the next week. But when have you seen opposing offensive linemen having to leave the game literally every other quarter? And you saw that on both sides of the ball.
I'm not a smart man. I'm not as smart as you. I'm not even
but
close
you know
to being a smart
man. Love is.
I do, and I love you, man. I love you. But you tell me if I'm wrong here. I noticed three things that I have not seen in a long time when watching a Nebraska game. First of all, an identity. There clearly was an identity on offense and defense. The absolute flying around of the football on defense. That first quarter was a hard hitting, from what I got to see.
It went the whole game. I remember one of the Colorado offensive linemen, I don't know his name, he was number 75, took him about 10 minutes literally to walk off the field in the and that was, I think, the third quarter. He was getting bent over backwards every third play of that game.
So you had a defense that was actually hitting, physical. You had an identity from just a culture-wise, and you had an identity on offense. I don't think I've seen an offense that has had an identity for Nebraska since, I don't know, 1999?
Yeah, last time you saw it was with Solich. And that even broke up a little bit.
With Crouch. I think the Crouch didn't have an idea because it was just give it to Eric Crouch and run the football.
That was the identity, was give it to Eric.
But there was rhyme or reason here, which is what I like to see. Hey, don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 12th, 2019 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln, 6:30 for your cocktail hour, 7:30 for the dinner and program. Keep listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast because sometime this season we'll also announce the Ford Legends Award winner. Usually it's a pretty darn good former college and NFL player. So that announcement will be coming up. And of course, at the end of the season, we'll find out who the Remington Trophy winner is. And that is a consensus winner of the three chosen All-American teams that Dave uses. And time now for our Remington Trophy watch list. And this week, we're going to Bryce Holland. He's a 6'2", 295-pound senior from Army. The West Point Academy. You wanted to do a military guy.
I actually applied to West Point. I ended up backing out of
that. What? You applied to West Point?
West Point and Air Force Academy.
I could see you in the military. I could. I could see you either at West Point or I don't think Colorado Springs would have been your because my cousin graduated from the Air Force Academy. You don't strike me as an Air Force guy. You strike me as a West Point guy.
I thought about both. You know, at the time, the big thing for the Air Force Academy was that you had Fisher DeBerry there. There was kind of the area. They were going to bowl games and beating teams. There was my wife graduated from Lincoln Southeast. They had two guys in that class who went to the Air Force Academy, John Onahan, Jack Alberg. Jack's still a full colonel in the Air Force. John retired a few years ago, but Onahan was a all-conference running back for the Air Force Academy. They ended up, I think it was their sophomore season, they ended up beating Ohio State, and I think it was the Holiday Bowl. I mean, they had some great teams in that era, and so from an athletic standpoint, that was the team that you looked at as kind of the, if you were going to go into one of the service academies, that was the place to go was Air Force Academy.
And so, Fisher DeBerry had a great, and they had good football teams.
Oh, they had some really good football teams when they were there. The other service academies, they've kind of struggled over the last few years until recently. Now it's kind of Navy. I mean, they kind of started running that triple option. And
well, Army did beat Liberty, Turner Gill's Liberty team, 38-14 over the weekend, where the Liberty punter got kicked out of the game. Did you see that?
No. What for?
Targeting.
God, they're dirty bastards.
I've never seen a punter get thrown out of a game before. Here comes the Liberty punter trying to make a stop on a punt return.
Might be the only time I've ever heard of that happening, which God bless Coach Gill, but I'll tell you what, Liberty's not very good.
You know, it's cool, and we'll get to Holland here in a second, but I'm trying to think, when's the last time Nebraska played a military academy? Because I think that's kind of a badge of honor. Whether you like, I think it's cool to play the military academies.
I agree, though. Now, the problem is I think they still play, well, I could be wrong here. Did they play an independent schedule? Well,
yeah, Army does, yeah.
Our Army does. Does Navy? I think Navy does as well. Air Force Academy, I thought, are they Mountain West?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Air Force historically was in the WAC, which Nobody in the original.
No, Navy is now in the American football athletic conference, in the American West.
Okay, so they're at least in a conference. It just always seems like they all sort of play, with the exception of Air Force, it seems they play sort of that old school pseudo-independent schedule. So
Bryce Holland, he's 6'2", a senior, 295. Yeah, I forget. Can these
little
guys,
atypical for a cadet at the academy.
Atypical?
Yeah, you don't see guys that big. The amount That's of true. Physical conditioning those guys have to do is mind-blowing.
Yeah, because you're never going to see your 310-pounders, right? You're not going to see a 295 guy.
You know, the only guy that I've seen recently, and I say recently out of the last 25, 30 years, was Chad Hennings, who was an Air Force guy, won the Outland Trophy, did a stint in the Air Force, flew in combat, and then came back and ended up playing, was a Pro Bowler for the Dallas Cowboys. I ended up playing against the guy. That was a large, large human being. Guy was about 6'7". And I don't know, this might have been sort of Air Force urban legend, but some of the other Air Force guys I know that knew Chad Hennings said that if he ever had to eject, he was so tall.
He would have hit the canopy?
The front of the cockpit would have cut his legs off just above the knees.
So he would have been like Goose.
Yeah.
There's a Top Gun reference
Take
for
me
him.
To bed or love
By
me.
The way, we are...
What was it? Or Lose Me Forever?
Yeah, something like that. We are recording this on September 10th. Tomorrow is September 11th, so it's also fitting that we pick the Army guy because I never forget. I asked my daughter tonight, I said, hey, tomorrow's 9/11. I go, do you remember? She goes, I was 5. She goes, yeah. She goes, we've been told that we're like the last age group that will remember 9/11, which is...
Yeah, my oldest daughter was literally 10 days old.
Yeah. So none of your kids have... Yeah. So, and Abigail...
None of them have... I mean, they all know of it. None of them have firsthand memory of it, obviously.
So for ticket information to the Remington Trophy presentation, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. While you're there, also check out the 2018 watch list. Of course, it wouldn't be a Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy if we were not drinking Infusion Brewing Company beer. And boy, it was cool because I saw tonight on Twitter that somebody came in, because they've been hearing about Infusion on the podcast, came in, and now the Radial IPA is their favorite beer. Podcasting works. Tonight, we're drinking the Max's Addiction. Now, this is a toffee bar milk stout. And when I stopped to get the beer tonight, Rob, I said, how did this come about? He goes, here's how it started. We sat around the table one night talking about how the Heath bar was my favorite candy bar. And out of that discussion of your favorite candy bar, Max's Addiction was born. It's a very dark milk stout toffee bar. Got about 6.6% ABV. And as you say, it's milky smooth.
This is alcoholic burnt sugar. That's the best way I can describe it.
Almost caramel-like then, right? Or that toffee. That's the toffee.
It is. I mean... It's like that next step past caramel. I mean, it's literally literally has almost a char to it.
Now, what were you saying? What did you want to eat with it? Because we were just sitting right before we went on the air.
Well, see, I'm kind of big into trying to pair foods with beers. And it's probably one of these things. I overthink everything.
No, not you.
Yeah, screw you. I didn't say the F word, Dave. Anyway. But yeah, I was trying to figure out what would I want to pair with this, and which I made myself hungry thinking about it. But it's got just enough sweetness, and usually I don't like the real overly sweet caramely beers, and a lot of stouts can be that way. I think a lot of brewers will just take a bunch of sugar, dump it in there, and call it a stout, and I hate that. And this it's got a tiny, tiny bit of sweetness. It's more smooth than it is sweet. There's not a ton of sweetness because literally all the sugar in here, I don't know how they do it, but all the sugar in here has almost that kind of that charred, burnt sugar toffee flavor. Mm. And so it's got kind of that sugary bite to it. But God, I was thinking, if you had something, say, like fish and chips, and you dumped a bunch of malt vinegar on them, you kind of rocked it old school British, which I know we kicked the crap out of.
We can go up to the Dundee Dell. Bring this up to the Dundee Dell.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do fish and chips with a bunch of malt vinegar on it. Pair it with this, you're gold right there.
You can go to infusionbrewing.com or also check out both their locations. We kind of frequent the one in Benson right on Maple Street, or they have the tap room and brewery operation in West Omaha. For location, just go to infusionbrewing.com. All right, let's get to what everybody wants to talk about. Because we can dive into the game, we can do a bunch of stuff, but the truth is everybody wants to talk about Adrian Martinez and the injury. And I'm just going to ask you, was it dirty?
Yes. Now, I didn't think at the time of the game, I didn't think that. And I even sat and watched the replay several times. And it wasn't until yesterday that I actually saw a slow motion ground level replay. And I know I'm kind of getting directionally here, but from the south, which would be looking from downfield back towards the offense. And that was the first time I looked at it, because everybody's been asking me, like, crap, you're a doctor. Is this an ACL? I'm like, well, I'm an anesthesiologist. I'm not an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, but you do work at the orthopedic hospital.
I do work at Ortho Nebraska, hang out with those guys. No, which, hey, it's all the of those guys, here's the thing. All of those guys, when I talked to them today, they said, you know, when we look at that replay, and none of this is like official diagnosis. Yeah. These are...
But that's why people ask you.
It is. It's a bunch of really, really smart doctors. And they told me when they looked at this, it looks like an MCL tear, or sprain or injury. And the MCL is the ligament that runs down the inside side of the knee.
And you tell me if I'm wrong, because my son had an MCL injury last year.
He did.
So the MCL, that's your best injury, right? You don't want the PCL and you don't want the ACL.
And that was the thing everybody worries about. That was the first thing when you called me after he got hurt was, oh my gosh, I think it might be an ACL. And that was the first thing that went through my mind was, crap, he blew his ACL. And then you don't hear anything, which only makes you think it's got to be the worst case scenario. So that's the big thing everybody's worried about. Was this an ACL tear? They came out today and said officially no ligament tears or no ligament damage. I heard sprain. I heard strain. There's some subtle differences. And that he's day-to-day, which given what we saw on Saturday, I don't know if we could, as fans, we could have heard better news.
Now, when you hear day-to-day, do you think that Scott Frost is being coy or do you really think it's day-to-day?
I think it's day-to-day.
So what has to happen for a guy? I mean, are you icing it a lot? Are you staying off it? What are you doing
to
get
better?
They
call it, I mean, a lot of the time the trainers call it active rest. So he's probably doing a lot of range of motion exercises, stretching, putting a little bit of non-impact and non-stressful work on the knee. Now, that could be light running. That could be exercise bike, some very low weight resistance weight training, and then a lot of, we always call it a treatment, and that ranges anywhere from ultrasound treatment, icing it, cold whirlpools, massage therapy, things like that, that he's going to be doing 2 to 3 times a day between now and Saturday.
So with a sprain, are you more susceptible to re-injuring or actually tearing it? Or do you tear an MCL or do you tear the meniscus that goes with it?
Well, the meniscus, think of the meniscus as sort of like a cartilaginous cushion.
Cartilaginous?
Yeah.
Is that really a word?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Believe it or not. In between the upper and lower bones of the knee. So it's sort of like a little shock absorbing pad inside the joint.
Okay.
So that's your meniscus. The cartilage lines the bones itself. And then the ligaments are what's actually holding the upper leg to the lower leg and stabilizing everything. I suppose there probably could be a higher risk of re-injury because if you sprain it or strain it, you've got some inflammation already in there, which weakens things a little bit. And those ligaments and tendons are potentially a little more lax, a little, for lack of a better phrase, stretched out a little bit.
So when I talked to Dr. Arnold at Ortho Nebraska, really good doc, right?
I send many people to him.
And my son would have been one of them. So we're talking MCL, you're talking...
And so this is Ryan Arnold, I think is one of the best sports medicine guys in the region.
So if you have a knee injury, go to Dr. Arnold because the dude's awesome. But we're talking...
That said, not a lot of weak links there.
Level 1, level 2, and level 3. Level 3 being the worst. So are we talking like a sprain is like a level 1 MCL tear, or it's not even a tear? Do you know what I'm talking about, right?
If I'm remembering correctly, a sprain would involve a tear.
Okay.
I'm going to get raked over the coals by the orthopods over this because... I know, like, volume of distribution and pharmacokinetics. I don't know sprains and strains as well. I believe, yeah, you've got a small tear in those ligaments. Like I said, I haven't seen an official diagnosis. I just heard no ligament damage and that he's day-to-day. I mean, that's all we've really heard out of Lincoln.
So if you're Scott Frost, you brace him up? Because I don't think he was braced, right? Do you brace up from here on out?
If he plays.
Well, he's going to play eventually.
Well, yeah. If he plays in the next week or two, I would be shocked if you didn't have a brace on that knee.
How about the rest of the season? And what does a brace do for range of motion?
It probably doesn't help much, but I mean, ideally, a knee really only moves in one plane of motion, moves forward and back, and that's it. Compare that to a wrist, an ankle, a hip, a shoulder, joints that are moving in multiple planes of motion. A knee only moves forward and back. That's it.
Now, keep in mind, the Huskers are going to be at home this weekend to play Troy. If you're looking for tickets, I know where you can find them, Ticket Express, because Ticket Express is your source for Husker tickets, and they've got all sorts of tickets. They can put you in the South End Zone, North End Zone, East Stadium, West Stadium. They can put you in club seats. They can get you parking passes. They can put you in the end or the championship or the end club. They can put you anywhere you want to go. That's because Chad has been doing this for 25 years. I mean, the guy is just a consummate pro. When Rob needs tickets, Rob goes to?
Well, I go to Ticket Express.
Yeah, because that's where you get your concert, Husker tickets.
College home run contest. Yep. We're big fans of that.
Yeah, anything you want. And we're talking Husker volleyball tickets and Husker football tickets.
Yeah, we're talking about a hard ticket to get.
Yeah, right, it now really is. I mean, and that's why no event is ever sold out when you go through Ticket Express. Go to TicketExpress.com. That's TicketExpress.com. And when you go to a Husker event, you got to look like a Husker fan because you are a Husker fan, and that's where Husker Hounds comes in. Scotty is our favorite redhead. He really, and he wants, he's got to get up here. He wants to come up here. You know, he's got a kid at Mount Michael now, so he's trying to time all this stuff when we get together. He's the busiest guy I know.
Tell him we've got beer from Infusion.
I know, and that will entice him. So, three locations in the Omaha area. That's Husker Hounds. Go to huskerhounds.com for all your Husker apparel and need. So, the questions coming in.
Did we finish the discussion?
No,
because you think it was dirty?
That's where I'm coming up here, okay, because I've got another question. You said you thought it was dirty. The Pac-12 has reviewed it supposedly and said...
They said, no, it's clean.
Yes.
There's no way they're not going to say it's clean. I mean, they're going to say it's clean, and the reason is because if they say anything, they've got to suspend this kid.
Yeah, well,
there has to be repercussions. If they say now is a clean hit, it gives them, they can sweep this under the rug and forget about it.
Okay.
If they say it's dirty, if this was intentional, then action has to be taken.
But how do you prove that it's intentional? You can't prove intentionality here. Is that a word? Intentionality?
Actually, I believe it is a word.
You can't prove that.
Did you see the hit?
I did.
Did you see it?
I did. If I were to guess, I would say yes, it was intentional. But how do you prove in something that's intentional? And that leads us into of all the emails we got tonight, because I put it out on your Twitter account earlier today. Hey, send in your questions. Most people don't want to know if it was dirty or not. Most people want to know, and I'll give Jeff the credit for the question, but this was from a million people. Does Rob have any grotesque stories about being in the football pile? People, I think, think this is normal in a football pile. A lot of people are like, tell Rob to tell us about his great scrum scrum experiences. I think there's a lot of people who go, yeah, it's dirty, but they think it happens all the time. Does it?
I don't think it happens remotely as much as people think it does, and the reason I say that is because there's not enough time. I mean, that pile is there for about 5 seconds, if that, and then you got to get back to the damn huddle. The other thing is, too, usually when you're in a pile up, there's an objective. There's been a fumble. You're trying to get the ball. There's been a fumble. You're trying to keep the ball in the running back's arms. We would dive into piles for no other reason than to make sure that we could get our own arms around the running back and keep the ball from getting ripped out at the bottom of the pile. And I've seen that happen where you'd be at the bottom of a pile, you'd have the ball. It's Nebraska's ball, and the opponent gets it away from you, and the rest give it to the opponent. I mean, that kind of thing happens. And 9 times out of 10, when there's eye gouging, lip pulling, that kind of thing, it's usually so you'll let go of a football. I mean, that's the reason that happens.
So you're telling me that people...
This guy's sitting here going, if this kid stays in the football game, we're getting beat. If I can put a little torque on this kid's knee and get him out of the game for a series or two, we've got a chance. That's what that hit was. If you looked at it, he's down. He's got him around the leg. The play is over. And then he rolls into and on top of the leg and twists it. And the moment you can tell Martinez yells out at him, then he lets go, pops up, and quickly walks away. It's number 44. Watch it.
Yep.
But the reason I say it's intentional is because, A, I saw him do it, and he was making a motion with his body, basically holding onto the knee and rolling into the knee joint itself after the play's over. It wasn't a, hey, I hit him and my momentum carried me into the side of his knee. It was, no, the play's over. He's down. I'm still holding on to it. I'm going to roll him up while he's horizontal on the ground and see if I can't tweak this knee after the play's over. And the moment it's over, he gets up and he's the closest guy to Martinez and he's the fastest guy to get away from Martinez. He got out of the frame of the picture faster than anybody. And I could tell Martinez knew right away, hey, this guy just cheap shotted me.
Did people in the stadium know it, or did it take for the replay to figure it out?
I couldn't tell in the stadium.
Because it happened
fast enough. And then you saw, again, he was one of the first guys to get up and get away from the pile after it was obvious, oh, shit, I just completely intentionally cheap shotted this kid. I'm getting my butt away from this pile fast. And Martinez pops up. He knows he got cheap shotted. I don't know if he'll ever say anything, but he knows. And you can tell by his mannerisms and the expression on his face, holy crap, that guy was literally trying to deliberately injure me. There's no other way around it. I don't care what the Pac-12 conference says. They're going to say clean hit every time because the moment they say, yeah, we think that was an intentional hit, that also means the conference has to take action against this kid.
Now, they said they're going to review it with the Big Ten. Do you believe that? I don't.
That they already did and announced they saw no damning evidence. Now, again, everybody else under the sun saw it. They just don't want to have to be the ones to take action.
So Andrew Bunch comes in after Martinez goes out, and I got to be honest with you, I was impressed with the way he played. Now
I did, especially considering the circumstances. Yeah. Spielman catches one pass, it's a different ball game, I think. And Bunch had the ball right where it needed to be. There was a couple of ugly drops in that game. And again, I think those guys are out there trying hard. Morgan had an ugly drop in the end zone. I mean, it was in the north end zone. I was sitting right above him. ball went right. I mean, it punched a hole through his hands.
Now, you kind of set me up on Twitter, and it's fine.
It's not that I don't like you. It just makes for good Twitter.
It does, and because people like to pile on me, right? I mean, that's what they let's you pile on the Hawkeye, right?
If you weren't a Hawkeye, I wouldn't have done it. But you kind of started it.
I did. Well, but
you totally started it.
See, I had that relationship with you.
I know.
Okay, so it was right after it went 14-0. And they had two turnovers, and Martinez had the second one that led to another touchdown. And I just, out of good nature, sent you a text. Hey, is Jebbia ready to come in? And I'm like,
bet you wish you had Jebbia now.
And then you shared it on Twitter, which I'm totally fine with because it gives people reason to pile on and makes you look like
an awesome dude. It makes me look like a dick. I mean, at that point in the game, I remember turning around. I mean, I took that photo of the
The scoreboard?
Yeah, the scoreboard.
The stats?
With the team stats at the time. And you looked at it, and it was like Nebraska, 180 yards rushing, Colorado, 17. There was like three sacks at that point. I mean, statistically, we were just gutting them. I know Colorado's happy. Colorado gets to go, okay, Colorado can say, hey, screw you, no moral victories. Look at the scoreboard. Here's the thing. Colorado got their ass kicked on the field.
They did. I mean, there's a classic game where statistics didn't tell the story.
They needed a cheap shot to get one of our players out of the game. It was just flat.
Cheap shot and a penalty, didn't they?
He did not get ejected.
No, but the cheap shot takes.
The cheap shot was on Martinez.
But how about the personal foul and targeting to take it away. Was that on the last drive?
It was on the last drive.
Yeah. So, I mean, you needed that too.
You did. Which we can talk about that.
I just brought it up, so why not just talk about it?
We should.
It's a podcast. We can do whatever we want.
It is. It is your podcast.
No, it's your podcast. It's our podcast.
This is our time, Mr. Hand.
We can do it, Mr. Hand.
Anyway.
Right or left.
You know what? I made this point on Twitter. If you watch that play, the pass interference targeting defenseless receiver call, in slow motion, yeah, I totally get it. It looks like a personal foul. In real time, you got a receiver going up for a pass. You got a defender going up for a pass. The defender does not know if the ball's too high, too low, or exactly where it's going to come. Now, pass was too high, but the defender doesn't. When the ball's coming towards you, you don't know exactly when it's going to drop. He went up. He struck the receiver with his hand and forearm in the chest. There is no head-to-head contact. It was about as perfectly well-taught
of a hit
that you could have for a defensive back against a wide receiver when you're going up for a pass. You strike the guy mid-chest, mid-torso to knock the ball loose to prevent the guy from catching the ball. You got to understand that the players are playing this in real time. The ball's coming at you in real time. This isn't one of these slow motion replays you can go back and look at five times over at different speeds. You go up, ball's coming, wide receiver. I'm popping this guy in the chest and hope it knocks the ball loose. That's all you're thinking. And it wasn't a helmet to helmet.
Well, that's why they took the targeting away.
So yeah, they took the target away. The problem is that the penalty itself, the personal foul, is not reviewable. You can't review it and say, nope, wasn't a personal foul. We're picking up the flag.
Well, you can pick up the flag before they have to.
Before the review. The review is only
for the targeting.
Was this targeting or not, and is the player getting ejected?
Now, do you think, because I always like to play what if. Nebraska fan can be mad at, but what if the roles were reversed? Would Nebraska fan and would you be saying that's a defenseless receiver, it should have been a personal foul? Because I would say the majority of Nebraska fans, if it was reversed, if it was their guy getting hit,
they'd be pissed, and if we were losing the game, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if that happened and we got that penalty – Because I have this happen every other game. I sit there and go, yeah, that was a good hit. That wasn't a personal foul. Or I'll see a call get made, and if it's a good call, I call it a good call. You know, the winning touchdown. First thing I said to I was sitting with my wife at the game. First thing I said to her and the people sitting right around me was like, ah, that sucks. Then the next thought that went through my head, it was a good catch.
It was a great throw.
It was a great throw, and it was a great catch. That was an outstanding catch.
But going back to what you said, despite losing,
I'm not afraid to call a spade a spade.
Yeah, but statistically, Nebraska mopped up the floor with Colorado.
They did.
Except
you know,
for
and there was a lot,
turnovers and
I
penalties.
Wasn't happy with the officials, but there was a lot of bad calls in the game. I think it was Colorado's. It was one of those first two drives. I think it was the first drive in which they scored that opening touchdown after the initial turnover. One of the biggest, most blatant holdings I've ever seen by Colorado's left offensive tackle, and the officials didn't call it. And there's two officials sitting there staring right at it. Neither one called it. Just a completely blatant hold, and it allowed a first down. Nebraska actually had them stopped. I think it was a third down play. If that blatant hold didn't take place or the officials called it, that touchdown doesn't get scored. Colorado punts, and it's a whole different ballgame.
And that happens in the course of almost every single game, though, right? I mean, you're going to have stuff like that.
God, there was two just really, really ugly holds that the officials didn't call. And I get it. I'd be the first to admit, oh, linemen, we're holding on every single play. These were ugly, blatant, game-changing holds, and it happened right in front of two officials, and they did not call it.
So, by the way, Adrian Martinez impressed the hell out of me. I was up in Des Moines watching the game on television, and I was like, man, this kid's for real.
He is. It's all of a sudden you understand, okay, that's why Jebbia transferred.
Yeah, I mean, the kid's for real. So let's
outside of an injury, there's no way Jebbia beats this kid out.
So let's go position group by position group. Or I don't want to spend that much time on everyone. Because
we can do it quickly.
Yeah, okay. What position group impressed you the most, and what position group do you think needs the most work? How's that? We'll narrow it down to two.
Group I impressed the most, defensive line.
Why?
Incredible, incredible physical play. Those guys, they beat the shit out of Colorado's offensive line. He had 7 sacks. I'm kind of including linebackers in there, but a lot of the really physical damage was done by the guys up front. Newell, the Davises. I mean, God, it was just Daniels. It was just ass kickings up and down the line by Nebraska's defensive front. That was the most physical I've seen those guys. Honestly, since you had guys like Potter and Sue and Crick there,
wow,
that's
Jared,
the last
Jared
time
Crick,
when you think about like Jared Crick and Zach and Sue and what those guys did there.
Yeah.
08, 09, 2010. I haven't seen physical dominance along a defensive line since those guys.
Okay, what group did not impress you or you think needs the most work?
This isn't a major slight because I think we've had a huge upgrade in the position, but running back. Running back and wide receiver. I thought the running backs, those guys have incredible, incredible talent. They amounted for 200 plus yards rushing. I thought they could have hit the holes a little quicker. It was literally like they were in close second, I'd say Nebraska's offensive line for best group. Again, just okay. I was truly, truly impressed by the quality of the run blocking in this game. There were some huge holes. And I say this in all honesty, I think the running backs were flat out surprised at the holes. I saw running backs running past holes because they were almost surprised they were there.
So
and they were that big. They weren't hitting the holes like I would have liked to have seen them hit with the speed and explosiveness. I'd like to see them hit the holes because I don't think they expected him to be there as quickly as they were. The offensive line did a surprisingly good job, and I think it even surprised the running backs. Wide receiver, I say that only because of the drop passes. These are passes these guys caught all last year. I mean, some amazing catches last year. Got to have those. Got to help this kid out. He's a freshman. The ball was catchable. It was where it was needed to be. I thought Martinez was surprisingly accurate compared to what I thought he was going to be. You got to make those grabs. Spielman for the first down. Morgan in the on the potential touchdown in the north end zone. Those are catches you got to make. The wide receivers blocking, though, again, first time in a while I've seen wide receivers just de-cleaning corners and safeties left and right.
Ron Brown's back in the building, baby.
Technically not a coach.
I know that, but come on.
And that was a hallmark of his coaching style. We're seeing wide receivers kicking the shit out of guys on the perimeter. They did a great job with that. I mean, I know I'm kind of handing out open-faced compliment sandwiches here. Hey, you guys sucked catching the ball in clutch situations, but oh my God, the blocking was awesome.
So
it really was.
I asked you this before we went on, hit the record button. You said, hey, save it for the podcast, and maybe then now is the good time to bring it up. I guess when I was watching, I thought the offense was going to be faster. And what I mean by that is running plays faster, just moving
at
a faster pace.
You wanted to see UCF tempo.
I thought we were going to see that. We didn't see it. I don't think we saw that.
I saw little spurts of it. I think you saw UCF 2016 is what you saw.
Okay.
And again, you got a freshman quarterback who actually hardly played his senior year in high school. This was Martinez's first live game, I think, in 2 years.
Wow. Welcome to the big time, right?
Yeah. Not too shabby, all things considered. Yeah. So I think you got a freshman quarterback who hasn't played in a game in 2 years. You got a brand new offense. I mean, God, this stuff is still new to these guys. You can't overstate that enough. I know they've had an off season. They've been doing 7-7 last winter, all summer. They got a spring ball under their belt. They got a fall camp under their belt. Man, this stuff's going to be new for a while. It's going to take a while for this stuff to gel in their heads from a decision-making standpoint.
Do you think it needs to be UCF-paced? And I'm just asking that because the defenses you're going to see in the Big Ten are not what you saw in the American Conference.
But can you imagine some of the physicality that you saw on Saturday?
I know.
Coupled with that kind of speed and that kind
of tempo? But can you keep that up? Seriously, I'm being dead serious.
No, but I don't think you could at UCF either. I mean, okay, if you want a good comparison game, go back to that Peach Bowl against Auburn because those SEC teams are basically really, really big, really, really heavy, really, really fast, athletic Big Ten teams. Most of the SEC teams don't do anything different. I mean, Alabama runs a base defense and a pro-style offense. They run nothing insane. They just do it really, really well with some of the best athletes in the conference and in the country.
Which goes to point, if you have the best athletes and really good coaching, you can run any style system you want.
It is, and they run their plays well. I mean, it's kind of the whole Vince Lombardi, Joe Gibbs methodology where you take what you're doing and you're running it to absolute perfection. You're blocking it perfectly. You're defending it perfectly. Nobody's ever out of gap. That's why you win football games, and they're doing it with great athletes. UCF went in against the one team that beat the two teams that were in the college football title game. I mean, they played Georgia. They beat Georgia. They beat Alabama. Neither game was really all that close. Auburn was a very, very good SEC team. And UCF beat them because they played their game. They played some up-tempo. UCF slowed things down at times. They slowed things down and went physically toe-to-toe with Auburn. And when they did, they beat Auburn. So I don't think UCF runs UCF speed 100% of the time. I don't think you can. I don't expect Nebraska to. But if Nebraska is able to do that a third of their offensive snaps, you're going to see a lot of fireworks and you're going to see a lot of wins.
You know, one thing people are pretty passionate about at Nebraska is black shirts. You know, I mean, I've never seen black shirts be talked about so much over the last 14 years, really longer than that since Charlie McBride left. But finally, from Bo Pelini to, I don't think Mike Riley cared. Or who didn't care about the black shirts that much? Well, it was kind of Bo, wasn't it?
You know, I think Bo actually did care about them. He wanted to make sure this was something earned, though.
And now, so Scott handed out 7 today. What do you think of the 7? It used to be the starters, right?
Classically, it was always the starters, and then maybe you had sort of like that extra linebacker and then that nickelback.
Yeah, so today he handed out 7.
And then the punter always got a black shirt.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Punter was considered part. Punter in football is considered part of the defense.
Kickers.
Heck, look at Liberty's guys like personal fouling, targeting guys left and right, getting chucked out of football games.
So what do you think?
Guys out of control.
What do you think of the 7 he handed out then?
Who cares?
I'm kind of that way now too.
I was that way in college.
Really? Why? I mean, because you were playing an era when. Those guys, I mean, that was like the badge of honor, baby. I mean, they wore those black shirts around like they were letter jackets on campus.
It's not like they were beating us in practice.
Ooh. So, dead serious now. I mean, I was having fun with you. You really didn't care.
It was a pain in the ass to block, I'll say that.
But, so, you really didn't care about the black shirts when you were college?
Not really.
Was that shared by a lot of the offensive guys, like, whatever?
Yeah.
Then, that's interesting.
I'm just saying, we didn't care. We were still going to beat them in the spring game because that was back when it was ones versus ones. You're still going to beat them in the spring game. You're still going to push them around during most all the scrimmages. Most of the goal line.
I think you've just broken every Husker fan's heart.
What?
Because
Nebraska's the historically good Nebraska offensive line doesn't give a rat's ass about the black shirts.
Do you think that's where coaches are – I mean, do you think that's why maybe – and I know tradition, but do you think that's maybe why Bill Callahan, Bo Pelini, even Mike Riley didn't care that much about it because they're like, well, a shirt doesn't really exemplify anything. It may be a badge of honor, but the truth is – It does kind of create this separateness between the offensive defense. If I was an offensive guy, I could see like, so what? You get a shirt. What does that mean? I never thought of it like that. You've kind of opened my eyes.
I was
here.
A starting offensive lineman. I didn't get a different colored shirt. I was just a starting offensive lineman. They're a starting defensive lineman. I will still beat you in practice every day.
So do you think the offensive guys feel that way even today? Like, whatever.
See, but it's an offense versus defense thing. I mean, it's sort of that whole mindset of, hey, have you ever noticed, you watch a defensive lineman make a big play in a game, what do? They celebrate. They're jumping
up. They throw the bones.
They're throwing the bones. They've got sack dances.
Yeah, you don't see.
What's an offensive lineman do when he wins a battle?
Gets back in the huddle.
Goes back to the huddle. Do you know why?
Because that's what you're supposed to do.
Because the average offensive lineman wins 99 out of 100 battles against a defensive lineman. Offensive linemen spend their lives kicking the shit out of D linemen 99% of the time. It's no wonder they celebrate. Because it happens about 1% of the time.
See, what's going to happen here is Jason Peters is going to listen to this. Adam Carricker is going to listen to this. Zach Potter is going to listen to this.
I've kind of taken a couple shots at JP.
Terry Keneally's going to listen to this.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Keneally's got it. He's like me. He's got a day job. He's a banker.
You're going to get
bright. That's a bright man, right?
You're going to get more calls from former players going, Rob. You did not beat us daily day in and day out. Now, would Stye back me up here? Would Uyghur back me up here? Would Joel Wilkes back me up here?
Oh, my God. You think any of those guys is going to say, oh, yeah, totally, Dante Jones and Dwayne Harris kick the shit out of me every day? No.
Trev Alberts?
No. Although I was the left guard when Trev was a senior, so he had to go against Lance Lundberg, and I'd take Lance in that one.
Wow. So now we're getting an idea of what this is.
Never mess with a kid from Wausau, Nebraska.
See, here's what we're getting
here,
folks.
Those guys got a nasty streak.
There is that offense versus defense. Rob doesn't care about the black shirts. They handed out 7 today, and it means nothing to him.
I saw Stoltenberg got one. I thought it was nice. I like Stoltenberg. Great kid. Kid's got a ton of fire.
But you are right with the celebrations. I mean, the most you get out of an offensive guy is a wide receiver will usually give a first down indication when they get a first down, and then there's a little celebration.
Now, okay, let's not get carried away here. Skill position guys, that's another breed. They're basically those are basically skinny defensive players who get the ball more often.
See, this is the truth comes out. This is what happens when I get a growler into Rob.
He just saying, O-lineman, it's a different breed.
He just starts opening up. You do. I mean, the more beer you drink, the more you open up.
You can ask me questions you want anytime. You just don't ask him that.
No,
much.
I think I ask quite a few questions. There's a difference between Rob
just avoiding the F-bombs when you bring up Brooke.
Listen, there's a difference between Rob 2 minutes into the podcast and 50 minutes into the podcast. I'm just letting you know that.
Try another question. Come on. I'm game.
I don't know where to go for the black shirts. I really don't. What do you think of kickers?
I appreciate the fact to make the rest of the world feel good about themselves that we occasionally invite soccer players to come out once in a while and perform on the football field.
In all sincerity, what'd you think of, and we've got to see it with Scott at UCF, but when you watch the way Scott managed a football game, did you like the way he managed a football game?
I did. I think he and the coaching staff have taken a lot of heat for the game management, the time management at the end of the game. I think people wanted to see give to a Zigbo and let a Zigbo pound it out, grind it out. They were getting 5 to 7 yards earlier in the game. I totally get that. I cannot argue against that mindset. At the same time, Frost has always had this philosophy of you play to win at all costs. I mean, you're going for the win. You're never trying to hold on for a win. You're trying to go take the win. And I think Scott's mindset wasn't protect a lead. His mindset was, we're going to try and go score more points.
See, I guess I'm kind of okay with that because I'll use – now, I was, of course, watching the Iowa State game this weekend, and Kirk Ferentz notoriously is you get a lead in the second half, and you're playing not to lose – instead of playing
and
to win.
And I think it has cost Iowa games.
It has.
Years.
Now, it didn't cost them this weekend, but it's a philosophy,
it's
right?
Iowa State, dude.
No, they were a lot better than I thought they were going to be. The defense was pretty good. They got to come along some offensive way. But really, it is a coaching philosophy. Kirk Ferentz isn't the only one. Scott's not the only gunslinger there is out there. What is there a happy medium between there? Because Scott's saying I'm playing to win.
That's part of the reason why I think people were a little upset. It's because I think Scott tried to play a little bit of a happy medium because I think there were some limitations in terms of players' comfort with the offense, guys knowing assignments, things of that nature. And then you've got Andrew Bunch in there now. And that does change things. I mean, do I think Andrew Bunch did a great job given the circumstances that he was thrown into? Yeah, I was surprised. I thought his throws were on. I thought he moved around in the pocket. I thought he managed things well. Would I rather have had Adrian Martinez out there? Oh, heck yes. So, there's going to be the occasional price to pay for not sitting on a lead, trying to protect it, trying to game manage the clock, and sneak out with the win. If they tried to do that against Auburn, they don't win that game against Auburn when Scott was at UCF. They beat Auburn because Frost never kept firing. He never stopped firing. He went after it every single time they were out there on offense, maintained a ton of aggressiveness on defense, and they ended up beating Auburn because of it. I think ultimately you're going to win a lot more games doing that. I'm one of those guys, I will go to my grave cursing the prevent defense. Hands down, one of the greatest abominations in all of football in my mind. I hate it. I see teams come out on defense.
Yeah, but isn't a prevent offense, and this sounds, it's not really prevent offense, but.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because it's just, well, we're going to.
Teams call it their 4-minute offense.
Yeah, we're just going to pound. That's what we going to try to pound the clock. We're not going to do anything fancy. I don't want to turn the football over. It's boring, and sometimes I think it backfires a lot of people.
I think it costs more games than people are willing to get. There's some of these. Got me on a rant now here.
It's fine.
Growler of Max's addiction will do that. There's some of these axioms, these dogmas within football that everybody swears by, that coaches swear by, that I actually think cost teams a lot of wins. And if the coaches would buck these rules a little bit, I think they'd win more games. And one of them's plain prevent. Now, if you've got the 94, 95, 97 Nebraska offensive lines, if you've got Derrick Brown, Calvin Jones, Amon Green, Damon Benning, Clinton Childs, if you've got a slew of fullbacks like a Makovic, a brother, or a Schlesinger out there, yeah, run a prevent offense and just run it, grind it out. If you've got the kind of guys we had that could line up and tell a defender, hey, we're running right off the right guard on this one, and still you knew they weren't going to be able to stop you, fine. Run a prevent offense. Run a 4-minute offense. Run that game control, burn clock offense. I don't have a good example on the prevent defense because that crap never works. When have you seen a team not march down the field against a prevent defense?
We're not going to get beat deep. Yeah, but we're going to give up the middle. We're going to give you up 25 yards in the middle.
Yeah, we're going to give you 10 to 15 every single play. We're just not giving up.
I think Colorado did that on the first play with Bunch. They were playing pretty deep, and he got a 15-yard gain right away.
Yeah. I agree.
You know.
Yeah, I think teams will do that against you. A lot of teams will always run prevent on both sides of the ball, and I think it's complete bullshit. You know, another one, if you want an example, is there's the whole mathematical formula for when you're supposed to go to two, go for 2 points.
Yeah.
It's complete horseshit. Unless you need it to win or tie a game at the very end of the game, you never go for two.
Interesting.
Kick the extra point, go to the sideline, go kick off. That's it.
Rob's philosophy right there. Did we miss anything? Oh, yeah. How about Sparty the other night? Your Spartans.
Oh, God, I watched that. I was watching that on my phone. God, that had to have been, 1 a.m. when that game
ended? Yeah, I was watching it. I was in Des Moines. I got a flat tire, so I had to stay in Des Moines on Saturday night. So I sat and watched that in a hotel room.
So
Herm Edwards has surprised me. They got two top 25 wins. I know that, but I thought it was going to be an absolute disaster.
I think these are wins that at the end of the year you're going to look back on and go like, wasn't that good.
By the way, note to any Big Ten team, never go to the Pac-12 and play because they always lose. I swear, every Big Ten team that ends up going to the Pac-12 on a Saturday night to start the season or first couple
game,
weeks, it's 100 degrees.
Grass,
it's always in
September.
It's always like in Tucson or Phoenix, and it just doesn't.
Although we did that one. It was the first game I ever started. I was a freshman at Nebraska, starting left tackle against Arizona State. We won.
Scott Frost, first start as a Husker quarterback, or they might have been 1-0.
Yeah,
they lost.
They
didn't go so well.
They didn't go so well.
But by the way, right now.
I agree with the thing is, though, I look at, I can't remember who made this point. I don't know if it was Lee Barfneck, but one of the guys who helps cover the Big Ten made the point that if you look at Michigan State last year, they had 10 wins. It was a very Northwestern-esque 10 wins where about 5 of the 10 wins you looked at and you went, oh my God, how the hell did they win that game? They totally should have lost that game. The other 5 wins were, well, maybe they should have won, but geez, they only won by 2 or 3 points.
That was takes a little luck to win that. I mean, it takes
that
luck.
That was Michigan State last year. They had a lot of close ones. I'm not convinced they're a 10-win team. Actually, I'm convinced they're not a 10-win team. I think they were lucky to get 10 wins last year, and I think a lot of last year was, in fact, luck. I don't think that was as an impressive a win for Herm as people are making it out to be. Everybody's like, oh, my God, he beat 15th-ranked Michigan State. Yeah, it wasn't a very good Michigan State team.
Here's what I'm convinced of. Ohio State's the best team in the league, and they're playing with a chip on their shoulder, and they're gonna be really good.
I agree with you that they're one of the best. I totally agree they got a chip on their shoulder. I do agree, watch out. I'm still drinking.
I mean, the Big Ten's better than right now.
I'm still drinking the Wisconsin Kool-Aid little bit.
Well, we'll find out because Wisconsin has Iowa in 2 weeks in Iowa City, and that's going to be – I think that'll be a true test for both of those teams. Iowa won't be ranked by then.
Iowa needs to find an offense.
They do. They really do.
Stanley needs to prove that the inconsistencies of last year were the inconsistencies of last year.
Listen, you can't complete 52% of your passes and expect to win. I mean, win championships.
So far, when I've watched him play, he is
not
the
good.
Exact same
I'm
guy.
With you. Now, defensively, they're solid, dude.
He is. He's going to have Purdue games.
And then he'll have Ohio State games.
He's going to have Ohio State games.
But you can't.
I don't think he's going to be consistent. He's just
I'm
not.
With you. I don't disagree with you at all.
Oh, it'd be nice if Iowa could actually find the run game they had last year.
Well, when you lose Akram Wadley, though,
the dude's a player. He is. I'm just saying, I think Iowa's offense might have taken a step backwards from last year because I think their quarterback play, their passing game – is the exact same they had last year, and I think they're a step back in the run game.
I don't disagree with you at all. Kelly Martin didn't play this weekend. Torrin Young, Iowa State's defense was better, but it just took them so long to find any sort of rushing game. Only went for 105 against Iowa State, so that's as a team. I don't disagree with anything you're saying there. Defensively,
Nebraska had 2 rushers over 100 yards, like 2 guys.
Yes,
not a team.
I'm not disputing those numbers.
Both went over 100.
But Iowa's defense is better than any Pac-12 defense, I think.
Yeah, I might give you that.
So,
they played though.
Northern Illinois. I mean, but from what we've seen, they're pretty solid. We won't know until
Iowa State team that's nowhere near as good as last year.
Oh, I think they're better than last year.
You think Iowa State's better?
Yes, I do, without a doubt. I think Iowa State is better, but they'll have a worse record than last year. I know that doesn't make sense.
I thought I was the one drinking all the beer.
Well, Nebraska's going to play Troy, and sorry, I'm not going to spend much time talking about the Trojans of Troy, but we did talk a lot about Nebraska. Another 1-1. So, yeah, but I still think Nebraska gets a win. Do you think Adrian Martinez plays? Yes or no?
Yes.
So do I. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to this Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. If you found us on Husker Max, thank you so much. HuskerMax.com, your source for Nebraska news 24 hours a day. Thanks to Infusion Brewing. Thanks to Ticket Express. Thanks to Husker Hound. And, of course, thanks to Dave Remington and the Remington Trophy. We'll talk to you next week on another edition of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.